Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hi, everybody. It's The Ruck, our top-rating podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times. Thanks for downloading us, thanks for listening to us, and thanks for writing to us. Anyone got any comments on what we say, providing that you're agreeing, write to theruck@thetimes.co.uk. We've got a fantastic panel today. In fact, looking around the studio here, it's probably the best panel we've had since last week. First of all, I know a lot of you are cricket fans on The Ruck, and how magnificent we've been feeling lately. A great test series between England and India, an absolutely staggering 4-1 victory by England. Jimmy, the bowler, and Alistair Cook, the batsman, rightly fated. And yet the day after this magnificent series, we were still in champagne mode, one person slaughtered the England team, said they were hopeless, there was no point in going to Sri Lanka. He demeaned the great Mo Ali as a useless spinner. And it's about time that he explained himself for demolishing the happiness of an English summer. Steve James of The Times, how dare you do that? What possible motivation could you have for slaughtering this great side?
Good to see you, Steve. That's a great intro, the best intro I've ever had. Yeah. Well, they're going to get hammered in Sri Lanka, aren't they? I was just being realistic. There was some praise in that piece, wasn't there?
Maybe a line or two. The Sri Lankan tour, is it meaningless then?
No, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, isn't it? It was a great test series, wasn't it? But it was a flawed test series. I think that's what I was trying to say. England managed to win without a top three.
Yeah.
And not having a clue what their batting order was.
So what you're saying is...
And they haven't got any spinners. But apart from that, it was great.
Now, another cricket one. Alex Lowe, we can dispose of this quite quickly. And you can answer yes or no, Alex. Is it true that last week, during the match between the Rugby Writers 11 and the Rugby Football Union, you bravely went onto the field with a serious hamstring injury and you helped guide the boys home with an excellent innings? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, that's enough. Yeah. I've heard this story about 50 times. We've also got with us one of the leading All Black fauners in history. on Saturday, the All Blacks lost to South Africa. Stuart Barnes of the Times and Sunday Times, you once dropped a goal, a magnificent drop goal, nervelessly in almost the last act of a major match at Twickenham, a cup final, to win for Bath against Harlequins. Your grandson by another granddad was absent totally. Bowden was not there when the All Blacks had got a position literally under the posts with seconds to go. One drop call wins it. Where, oh, where was your great Bowden?
I would say that the one thing I've got in common with Barrett is our surnames both begin with B. It starts and it ends there. I'm not blowing my trumpet, though I have dropped a goal in a test match in Wellington, which I don't think Bowden has done, in 1985. That was at the start of the game. This was at the end. Steve, I'd like to think it's a collective error on the part of the team But an individual like Barrett has to take the responsibility. I wouldn't mind even if he sliced it, topped it, missed it, but I want Barrett or Damian McKenzie, who was on the pitch as well, to take responsibility and have a go for it. That is the greatest crime of all. Everyone misses, we all make mistakes, but to not have the courage to take that moment on, that was a serious flaw. But, you know, Beauden Barrett is a genius, and as we know, all genius have feet of clay. The clay enveloped his feet in the 79th minute.
Well, he didn't have any feet, clay or otherwise, because he wasn't anywhere to be seen. There was no boots, feet.
Well,
there was no Beauden.
No, he was moving very quickly, left to right, all over the pitch.
Would you say also, though, that he was easily corralled by the Lions? Would you say he can't take the pressure at the very, very big games?
No, I wouldn't. The problem is he plays so many unbelievable games, that the like of which we've not seen. When he's moderate, people knock him. When he has a poor game, everyone savage him. And that's New Zealand as well. You know, he has one poor game for the All Blacks. They want him out straight away. I don't believe that. And I do believe that if you're scoring five or six tries a test match, and Beauden's creating or scoring a couple of them every time, it's only once in a blue moon you're going to lose, even if you're missing all your kicks.
Alex,
isn't he a better fullback than a fly-half?
Alex, it's very unusual for the All Blacks to lose. Let's hope it becomes far more regular. But they've lost a game. Stuart was suggesting that this is the defeat that makes them. So, in other words, you can't lose, really, because if you win the game, it's brilliant. If you lose the game, it's also brilliant. So,
wonderful logic.
You know, it must be great life being all. But, Alex, surely now that's given the rest of the world hope, because they didn't play well and they didn't know how to get out of the game under pressure.
It has to give the world hope, because if it doesn't, then we might as well all give up. I can see, much to your disgust, I can see why it may well make the All Blacks stronger, because in the pressure of a World Cup, someone might actually say, let's drop a goal here and win the game instead of trying to win it with a flashy try in the last minute. And there is they've got a history of that, obviously. Previous World Cups where they failed to go for it. It was only Dan Carter in the last one who, you know, was practical enough to take the points when they were on offer. But it has to give the rest of the world hope, because without that hope, then why would we go to the World Cup with any ambition at all?
Steve, was it the result that the World Cup needed, though? Because the last 3 weeks, all the fallers and droolers have been going around as if there's no point in the rest of us going there.
Yourself being one of them, Steve, I seem to recall in one column.
Oh, that was a loose moment. I've been drinking.
I think it was brilliant. It was a brilliant game of rugby to watch. I was convinced the Blacks were going to win. I think the flip side of this drop goal business, isn't it a brilliant attitude that they backed themselves to score that try and they kept playing?
Not if they lose the game, though.
No. But I mean, whenever you never see the All Blacks kicking the ball out, you know, like some sides will say, oh, it's all over, we'll kick the ball out. They just keep playing, don't they?
But something
to admire in
that. That's why today in the Times I called it sad, because I admire the way they play and they're trying to take the game on. But when a drop goal should only be worth 1 point and it's worth three and you're 2 points down, there has to come a moment when it's not just about having fun and entertaining. Yeah. It is about winning, and they did bottle it. It was 2007 Cardiff against France all over again, but they will learn from that lesson.
That was a World Cup game, wasn't it?
You're not out there, Alex, to win the game when it's there to win.
Absolutely you are, yeah. And that's why I wonder whether there's a psyche of trying to score tries. I was reading something over the weekend that it's not... There's no glamour in a drop goal at age grade level. They're all out to win with pizzazz, and actually winning is what matters. And going back to your question to me earlier about what it means for the World Cup, I think teams will draw hope from it, but I'm not sure they draw a huge number of conclusions about how to beat the All Blacks, because I felt from what I saw that they largely beat themselves.
First, well, I'd just like to say on that, first of all, the Springboks, I'm absolutely delighted for Razzy Erasmus, because there was a ridiculous amount of hassle coming round his head as if he'd lost the last 20 games. We all know that he's got two problems, well, three problems. One, so many players abroad. Two, it's a new team coming through. And three, he's got to pick certain players. And I think he does a great job. I think he's a great man, and I'm really pleased. But... was the big story, none of those, was the big story how beautifully Argentina played against Australia? The likes of Boffelli, Delgue, Sanchez, my goodness, it was exhilarating.
That story, Steve, is one that's building ahead of steam. It's the win in Australia is the third part of a very handy period of play, beating the South Africans, brilliant in defeat away to New Zealand. And what's interesting about Argentina, since Mario Ledesma has taken over, the one thing they haven't been able to do is scrummage. Now, they've still got guys like Ramiro Herrera at Stad, and they've got people like Juan Figalo at Saracens. They've got, in the back row, Issa to come back. They get that scrum right. And Sanchez stays fit and in the world-class form that he's in. Then with the players they've got around them and their ambition, they are going to be as formidable in 2019 as they were in 2015.
Steve, the end of that game, we saw something in terms of a howler could be said to be more than Beauden Barrett's, worse than Beauden Barrett's, when Israel Farrow, a great player, with a man outside him who could have walked, crawled in his hands, on his hands and knees, held onto the ball. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah,
scandalous.
I mean, I didn't see all that game, but I did see the end there.
Well,
yeah,
nice to turn up at the end. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and he's totally butchered that try. Why was he playing on the wing and not fullback? He's probably the best fullback in the world, isn't he?
Because I think what's happened to Checker is he's losing confidence in the people who should be where they are. And Viv Richards once said in a cricket match, you want to win the first match of the series because then the good players get kicked out with the bad. I think that's what's happened. Argentina, most of our favourite second teams, they're kept coming strong.
Yeah, they are. And as Barnsley just said, they can be formidable in 2019, which does not bode well for an England team who are desperately trying to find their identity, because England are going to World Cup with France, who look like they're a coming force again, and Argentina, who are proving to be a coming force again, and suddenly that group looks even harder than it looked before.
Stuart, you were across the channel many times this season, commentating on the big French games. There is a revival going on there, as far as I can see, in terms of the style the teams are playing. They're becoming a little more expansive. And players are coming through, French players are coming through?
Yeah, I mean, Bernard Laporte, who I've criticised a lot over the years, has done something right in that he's making sure there's only a certain number of overseas players now. There are more French players coming through and there is an immediate reaction. French club rugby, though it's got a reputation for being sort of stodgy, they've always unloaded, but they've unloaded slowly. What I'm seeing now is an unloading game with support runners coming at pace, and that makes all the difference. Toulouse, who in those glorious years of Poitrineau, Cedric Hamon and Vincent Clerc, they played the most magical stuff in the back three. Toulouse are doing that again. Stade Francais, who have been desperate for a decade almost in how they play, they've got Gael Ficou and Jonathan Dante playing really well, and the support lines are good, and there's a pace in the game. And I always watch a lot of French club rugby, and I've noted, I think it's about 25% quicker, but also it's more accurate as well, and there's more ambition. And I think that will translate, and that will give us hope, because we all want to see a strong French team.
Of course we do. Yesterday, there was a very, very controversial incident. I tweeted it, actually, to inform all my followers that Will Rowlands had been sent off, which was a shock to him as he was sitting in the stand in his blazer.
Will Spencer.
And it actually wasn't Will Skelton either, or Will Scarlett, or Will Greenwood, or Will Shakespeare. It was Will Spencer. Huge, blistering row has broken out, led by Jordan Murphy, who in the Times this morning, who completely dismissed it, said it was a joke, said he should never have been sent off, which for Jordan, I thought, was slightly out of order. Alex, red, yellow, or not even a penalty?
To describe it briefly for anyone who hasn't seen it, Will Spencer, 6'7", came in to make an upright tackle on Tommy Taylor, who's 5'10", and was sent off because after numerous replays, Ian Tempest concluded that he'd remained upright the whole time. His shoulder had driven with force into Tommy Taylor's head, and under the laws of the game, that's a red card. The row that broke out was because the changes that are being made to make the game safer by the lawmakers and the sports scientists who have done all the research, they're trying to drive the height of the tackle down. And the view from the players, the attitude of the players and the DORs is basically not in my name. They don't agree with the way the game is going if an incident like that is a red card. And that's the division we now have in the game, that the players are being protected from themselves by the lawmakers. And they do not like the way the game is going.
Stuart?
They're both right and they're both wrong. We do need to drive the height of the tackle down. The administrators are right, the players and coaches are wrong there. But the the manner in which decisions are being made is wrong. Murphy said something that I thought was very interesting. He said, we've got to start using this word intent again. I cannot believe the game ever went away from intent when it decided upon yellow and red cards. Will Spencer had his left arm out. He was in a tackle position. Yes, it was high. Was there any intent? Taylor, a much smaller man going down. No intent whatsoever. How can you red card someone because of the letter of the law and not intent? That is, to me, an insanity.
Steve?
Yeah, I think it was a red, but I'd love to know, if you scoured every single Premiership game that was played last weekend, how many other tackles like that went totally unpunished and nobody even saw them? I'll bet you there are quite a few. I think that's the problem, the consistency.
Do we think people should be sent off if they have no intention in the name of safety? And do we think... one thing here, it's starting to drive me mad. Our society has become obsessed with safety for everything, at all angles. And to me, we've got people outside rugby now telling players and telling coaches, oh, we're doing this for your benefit. And I'm starting to understand why Murphy is talking about. He used PC, didn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, are we not becoming almost obsessed with safety for players?
It's clear there was no intent. But I think the regulators are trying to say that his intent should have been to make a lower tackle.
Exactly.
He should have lowered himself to make the tackle, which is very difficult when you're in a dynamic situation with a split second to react and you're 6'7" and he's 5'10". That's the intent argument, I think, in a nutshell.
Sorry, I don't buy any of it. I disagree with you all. The intent, if I'm in a car driving like a maniac and I drive into Stuart's car at 80 miles an hour, I didn't actually mean to do it, but I'm guilty if either I have an intent to do it or I'm completely reckless as to the consequences.
As well,
And I'm afraid I thought that the offence, an elbow to the jaw of another player, first of all, it doesn't matter if he's 6'20" or 1'2". It's just tough. You can't say everyone who's 6'7" has carte blanche.
Yeah.
I think it was a red under any circumstances before the recent strictures came in. And I also have to say, look, we all know the games, there's some really stupid things that are penalised. But frankly, someone is going to sue someone else, and that's what the games rulers have got to keep an eye on. I thought it was a red card, no dispute.
I mean, the other issue going on from that is, as it was yesterday, it ended up being a good game. But if they're going to be that strict on those tackles, it's going to be 15 against 14.
Yeah.
I mean, John Westerby, I think, mentioned in a column a while ago, didn't he, maybe bring in something different, like an orange card, you know, something different from a real act of foul play for a red card, something in between a yellow card. I don't know.
It's funny that, because if they'd had one of those in the 2011 World Cup, Wales would have won it.
Well, exactly. Well, yeah, with the Warburton thing, yeah.
Like, Alex,
I don't know. What do you think of that, Stu?
I'm sort of a little bit peeved with the fact that yellow cards were actually brought in to make the game a better game and to cut the cynicism. And what they're actually used for now is referees who haven't got the balls to say red card or not. And that's my issue there.
Do you think it'll make it even worse, in between?
I fear that would be the case, yeah. I think referees have it very hard because there's a set of laws they're meant to know, and then we've got these strictures that administrators every 2 weeks come up with a new idea to save the game and make us safer. And the poor referees, they don't know what they're doing, and it shows.
But I don't think it helps the game that, you know, coaches and players will come out and just say, oh, the game's gone soft. We want to allow tackles like that to happen because
it hasn't gone soft, has it?
I was sitting at the Ricoh Arena, and the intensity of that game and the hits that were being made legally, and the power and the force and the pace at which this game has been played was extraordinary.
Yeah.
In fact, Christian Day, as the previous chairman of the Rugby Players Association, has tweeted today making exactly that point. The game has never been tougher, I don't think.
Hmm.
But what the game is trying to do is remove shots to the head. And I agree with you, Steve. I thought that was a red. I thought the reaction was unfortunate from someone like Jordan Murphy. And I think it's actually not the only... It's the issue in the game that's causing the most headlines, but there are other major disciplinary issues which the game is not addressing around the breakdown
clear out,
in terms of net rolls, which Sam Warburton spoken about, David Pocock has suffered from. Any kind of crocodile role is really dangerous, given that the jackal, which you've written about, Stuart, the jackal is there. They're trying to clear him out, and there are legs getting caught, there are necks getting bent, and there are players flying in off their feet, smashing other players in the head at the breakdown.
I mean, the essence of the breakdown is binding. When you drive into it, there is no binding. There's no referee in the world who even looks at it. So, frankly, there's four of us sitting here in our nice little broom cupboard. But you know what on earth is going on? The game is not being administered at the breakdown, which is the essence of rugby union, the way it is played at the moment. There's no lead.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's just go on to the other side of the Premiership, because I read some statistics yesterday that it's easily the most number of tries there's ever been at this stage. Now, some people love all that, but doesn't actually mean it's been that brilliant. But it has been. All the games I've seen have been fantastic. People have given it an attacking blast. They're trying to attack from anywhere, not even Northampton, etc. Alex, you saw two games on the weekend. Premiership, is it doing it for you at the moment?
Yeah, it really is. I think it's been a brilliant start to the season. And the game I saw at the Rico, I think one of the big shames in writing a report on the game was that most of the report was about the debate over the sending off. And actually, some of the performances and some of the rugby played got rather overshadowed by that. I think there are great signs for the season, the great signs for the way the game's been played. And when you see Manu playing as he did for the first 20, when you see George Ford playing as he did, Elliot Daly at fullback playing as he did,
Daly was out this
week. It was a great spectacle, it was just a shame that some of the rugby got overshadowed by the sending off.
Steve, you've now deigned to join a serious sport after your cricket season.
Transitional period. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. No, I know you watch a lot of rugby, but what have you seen so far, and do you think it's actually on the up?
But yeah, the entertainment's been good. I'd like to echo that about Elliot Daly. I reckon I mentioned Elliot Daly as the England fullback on this podcast a while ago, and there was a lot of guffawing going on from Mr. Jones, especially. I'm sure. Anybody else remember that?
No, I just said
I think pick players in the right position. You said
I think he should be 13. I think he should be 13. That's all. Yeah,
I think he should be 11.
Do you? Surely. He's got to be fullback now. He's been brilliant the last 2 weeks, hasn't he? When was the other game when he made that brilliant break?
But don't forget, he's not going to play fullback, club rugby at fullback.
Why? Because Willie Roo will come back. Yeah. But I'd pick him as England fullback. And especially interested in Gloucester as well, being a Gloucestershire boy.
Yeah.
Be interested to see how that sort of carries on, whether they can maintain that good start to the season. But they certainly seem to have a good pack of forwards, don't they? Ed Slater's making a big deal. And that's a serious back row they got on there. Ackerman at 8, Ludlow 7, and Paledry on the
Judas Paledry.
Except Paledry doesn't always get in.
Stuart, you should watch him as a boy, as a boy. Yeah.
You're making a welcome return to a Premiership action this week.
Yeah.
Premiership report in action. What have you seen of it so far? I know you've probably seen almost more games than the rest of us.
If we can get Sale Worcester out of the way, which was abominable, I've really enjoyed it. I think it's been excellent. I'm fascinated with Bristol.
Yeah.
A lot of people obviously didn't watch Pat Lam in his previous incarnation at Connacht. Keep saying, what are Bristol doing? Playing from the back, doing this. This is the Lam way. It tries to tire people out. Didn't work against Gloucester, but they're going to keep doing it. And if they're going to go down, they're going to go down in glory. And I think they will keep catching defences out. And what will happen, I think Bristol will get used to the increased intensity of the Premiership. And I don't think it's them being naive. I think there's one or two coaches, maybe critics, who don't quite realise the Lamb way, and they're going to be really interested. And it's also it's good to see Northampton finally stopping just banging up and down the middle and playing with variety and width. I was hoping Boyd would bring that. It's certainly not playing like the Hurricanes. They shouldn't be playing like the Hurricanes. They're going to move to a merge between North and South, and I think they'll be formidable by Christmas.
Alex, Saracens and Exeter standing out, obviously. Mm. But it does seem that if you're trying to nominate the teams between, say, number 3 and number 8, it's going to be unbelievably difficult. And someone is not going to have a bad season, but they're going to find themselves at number 8.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in our pre-season predictions, put Worcester to go down, but said they could easily go down with record points.
Yeah,
it's one of those years when, you know, the cliche of everyone could beat everyone, but that competition from third down to eighth is fierce, because if Northampton get on a run, if Harlequins get on a run, you know, they can make a big impact on the league. I think I picked Leicester to be top four, and actually they look a different team. It's certainly a different team to the first weekend when they were at a shambles, and I feel almost deliberately so that the players had completely lost faith in O'Connor, and what he's asked him to do. George Ford looks like a different player than he looked all of last year. I think they're going to make a mark, and I think as Stuart said about Bristol, that they've almost epitomised the attitude of the league this season, that they haven't come up to just try and play percentages and cling on for some losing bonus points in the hope that they might pit Worcester for survival. They've come up to have a go and play in the Pat Lam way, as Stuart described, and it's just been such a refreshing addition to the league. And they ran out of steam against Gloucester, but most teams will this season. So it's been brilliant.
Steve, since you were last on, there's been a big event in Wales, the retirement of Sam Warburton.
Yep.
Sad in many ways, A, because he's, in my opinion, one of the greatest flankers I've seen, B, an absolutely magnificent guy. I know you have worked with him on books and whatnot. You must have been as disappointed as Sam was. How did you see that whole thing and the state of mind of Sam at the moment?
Yeah, obviously did an interview with him a couple of weeks ago. I mean, when it first came out, I have to admit, I wasn't that surprised. I mean, done an interview with him in March. He'd obviously had some dark times after the Lions tour, and I think he'd already decided to retire, I think, at some stage before Christmas.
Okay.
I think after Christmas, he was getting a bit of criticism and people saying he wasn't going to come back, and he's that type of character. He wanted to prove people wrong, and I think his body was starting to get a bit better. So, he did make a big effort to try and come back, and people were saying that he was training well and was in good nick, but then I think he just took a few blows at training, and there was one day there at the Cardiff training ground where he just decided he didn't think he'd be able to cope with it, and he didn't think he'd be able to get up to the level he wanted to get up to it, and that was it. I mean, it is sad, he's only 29, but he's packed quite a lot into those 29 years. I mean, he's done almost everything in the game, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
So it's sad, but he seems in a very good frame of mind.
Do you think he'll stay in rugby? He's gone into the media for the moment, but
yeah, I mean, he's obviously doing some TV stuff, and I think he's been quite good on that, hasn't he? I don't think he'll go into coaching or anything. Okay. I mean, maybe ambassadorial work for Cardiff and the WRU. You know, he's a pretty good ambassador for the game, I'd say.
Sorry, didn't know Cardiff is still going. Stuart, Sam was really, really battered and bruised many times in his career. Then there was a debate between you and Sam. It was just conducted, I felt, in reasonable diplomatic language, where you'd written a piece to say that the jackal is now a dead animal because it's dangerous. And
it should be.
You didn't like it for many other reasons. Sam actually came back and said, "This is why I love jackaling." But was that slightly?
Sam sent his best, by the way. He's a big fan.
No reason not to.
But I found it slightly odd and slightly in your favour, Stuart, that he had this battering, and a lot of it was sticking his head where no man would wanted to go, if you know what I mean.
And look what happens. What I found interesting there, you know, we will agree here, you and I, Steve, who remember Ruckin, and people say, well, if you don't jackal, and I think Sam said that, if you don't jackal, you can't get the ball back and you need turnover. There's nobody, I was a former fly half, I understand the importance of turnover. No one likes turnover more than me. No one has spent more time watching wide-angle television seeing the impact of what happens from a turnover. I believe in it. But I think the jackal, whilst it has become an art form, it's a dangerous thing for the players who do it. It is also, without any doubt, a way to slow the game. And because what Sam had this view that you can't have more than two people going on to protect the jackal, my view was that leaves 12, 13 people spread out across the pitch all day, and you end up with a rugby league situation. Now, how do you combat that? My view was you have rucks, you have decision making where people say, let's send five men in, we'll drive it over the top and we'll turn it over. There's a risk that if you don't turn it over, you're outflanked. But this is what rugby is. It's about decision making, and it's why ever since the jackal has been there, I have never changed my view that the ruck was a more suitable way to play rugby union than the jackal.
I totally agree.
But I mean, that's a massive change to make now, isn't it? From the way the players play.
No. It is a massive change, Steve, and I would never be so stupid as to say, right, there's no jackal now. At international, at professional level, of course there is. But what you can do, you can eliminate it at school level, you can start to eliminate it at junior club level, age group, and therefore, by the time you get 10 years down the road, we will have a generation of players who will be as unfamiliar with jackal as players of Sam's generation became with the ruck.
I also think that the ruck had a lot of bad publicity because people got this image that people would come out with their cut bleeding. Yeah. What that was people being kicked in the head. It was nothing to do with the ruck. Yeah. And the referees allowed it because they thought, I better be trendy. This is good rucking. What happened was, I mean, there was one time when Graham Rowntree was kicked by Ian Jones in the head. He cut his head and Rowntree was wearing a head guard. That's how bad it was. That was stamping. That's not rucking.
Yeah. I mean, anyway. Some of the injuries now at the clear outs are horrendous. And I mean, Sam himself had one for the Lions against Australia. Paul O'Connell had one. Reese Webb had one, didn't he, just before the last World Cup?
There's no comparison.
De Villiers. There's been some horrendous injuries. People are trapped there and then they get smashed.
Listen, there's no comparison with being in that jackal position where you end up peeling your hamstring off the bone to be in a position on the floor, having made a tackle or being on the ground and getting a shoe in. And the problem is, and I go back to this safety thing, we're obsessed with what things look like. If you get half your shirt ripped off your back and it's a backwards motion and you're in the wrong position, the game goes on at pace, the players don't mind, there is a self-policing. And nobody likes this word self-policing except players. And I tell you who else likes it. Referees of a certain age who will swear the game is better when players know. Steve made that point then about kicking in the head. No players understand that. What happened when there would be a kick in the head? You would have an all-in fight.
Yeah, that's an all-in.
Okay, let's just go on. Alex, I just want to ask you about another thing that comes under the heading of safety. There have been two huge meetings now between what they call the stakeholders in rugby. One was in San Francisco and one was a less formal one and was in Australia about a structured season. And surely everyone thought that would end in the reduction of matches, especially international matches. Brett Gosper on Radio 5 on Friday was honest enough to admit, and I know he's got savaged for it by the shadowy major unions, that the game should have fewer test matches. And he's the first man I've heard in authority who's ever said it. What's your opinion of the feeble... Well, sorry, that's my opinion.
You wrote a very good piece on this on Sunday, Steve.
What's your opinion on structured season and Gosper's words?
I think Gosper does get a lot of stick from a lot of the unions because he's not afraid to voice an opinion, as is Gus Pichot. I think he was quite right. I think the less is more concept for international rugby is crucial for international rugby, and it's crucial for the players. England could end up playing... Is it 20 test matches in 12 months if they get all the way in the World Cup next year? That's a phenomenal amount of test rugby on top of a full Premiership and European season on top of contact training in between. It's way too much. It's out of kilter. Now, if you talk to, I mean, Jamie would know in Wales, that fourth international in the autumn, which this year ludicrously is against Scotland, is crucial for the funding of the game. England have got a fourth international. In fact, I mean, I know Brett made those comments, but virtually every country's been sanctioned to play outside of the international window this November.
As you said to me last week, is it eight countries are playing outside the international window?
Yeah.
Regulation 9 should go both ways. Okay, it's come to the stage of the ruck now where we choose our god or goddess of the week, someone who we think has just been so superlative, magnificent, soaring above the normal earth and into the heavens in rugby. And we'll start off with Alex Lowe, god or goddess of the week, mate.
Well,
and it can't be you for that thing with your hamstring.
I wasn't expecting the intro I got, so I had written down the Rugby Writers cricket team on the basis that that's two wins out of two against the RFU. Garage match. But as that was clearly not allowed, I'll say Razzy Erasmus.
Razzy Erasmus, very
because
good.
I think he's a force for good in South African rugby, and he was talking about the pressure he was under going to that game. So I'm delighted for him, for South Africa, and for the wider game that he got the win.
Stuart, god or goddess, please?
A god. Matt O'Grady. Matt O'Grady was referee of Ealing Trailfinders against Yorkshire Carnegie on Saturday afternoon. Matthew O'Grady, the first time a player killed a ball 2 metres from the try line, gave him a yellow card. I don't want these high-profile referees who are talking to their players with their first name turned, saying, come on, get your hand off it. I've warned you once, and then don't realise when the player takes their hand off it, the player's made a complete monkey of the referee.
That was early in the match.
5 minutes in, exactly. Open the game up.
The first 2 minutes,
do it.
Fine. Steve, that's a good one. That's a good one. I was going to have him as well, but...
I was going to say Elliot Daly for his performance of fullback for Wasps, but I'm going to go with Jake Pelledri for Gloucester. I thought he was outstanding on Friday night.
Judas Pelledri.
Well,
this is the man who's left 9 clubs.
I think England have missed out there, haven't they?
Yeah. Absolutely. He's pretty fantastic. Mine would be Lord Gosper, I'm afraid. It's very unusual I elevate officials to any status at all. In fact, I don't like most of them, but fair play to Brett. I know what it takes for the paid official to speak out. I bet you, as I said in the paper, I bet you his phone was red hot before he'd even left the studio. The Ruck at thetimes.co.uk. If you want to communicate with us, we'd be delighted to hear from you, all your criticisms and praise, if there is any. We should also remember that out there, there's a sport played for at amateur level by boys and girls, men and women, which everybody still loves, still goes to do, and we should be reflecting that or at least keeping it in mind. And I'd also mention mixed ability rugby, which is now booming. That's rugby where people with various handicaps team up with able-bodied people. They have games, and it's just wonderful, and they're sprouting out all over. Also, good news today on the news front is that the England women's team, 28 of them, Alex,
yep,
will be paid. So that's the 15-a-side team. No, mm-hmm. no more just paying the sevens, which is ridiculous. So the England 15-a-side team go professional, 28 of them. God bless them. Good luck to them, because they lost out a lot over the years. Thank you for joining us on The Ruck. We'd like to wish Steve James a happy trip to Sri Lanka.
Thank you.
No one will want anything back from copy from that if they're going to get slaughtered by as many as you say. Stuart, welcome back to the Gallagher Premiership this year. Alex, where are you on Saturday?
Oh, we haven't decided yet.
Right, well...
So don't
know. The well-organised papers, like the Sunday Times, I'm delighted and really looking forward to seeing Bristol and Harlequins. Thanks to everyone for watching The Ruck. Sorry I got the wrong Will, and we'll be back next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worry of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.